Welcome to Healing with Worth, a podcast dedicated to healthy recovery and instilling hope in the wake of betrayal trauma. We are women who have experienced this intimately and want to offer hope to other women. While we may interview professionals on the show, the content should not be taken as therapeutic advice and is not meant to replace therapeutic healing. If you would like to join one of our free online Worth groups to help with your betrayal trauma, you may find us at healingwithworth.org. Welcome to Healing with Worth. We're your hosts, Janine and Naomi. Today we have a guest with us, and we are so excited. We have Kaylee Dunn here with us today, and Kaylee is an EMDR therapist, and she specializes in betrayal trauma and unwanted sexual behaviors. She provides telehealth therapy services to women and men in Utah and Arizona. She also co-facilitates a weekly live group discussion through her free Facebook community called Awake, Resilience from Betrayal. Kaylee is also a mom to triplets who are 7 and twins who are 5 years old. And wow, you have got your hands full. I mean, 5 kids. Just one at a time is enough, but you got them all at once. So, wow. Yeah,
we're busy.
That's awesome.
Well, welcome. We are so glad to have you on the podcast today.
We Thanks are. For having me. And thank you for taking time away from all of your kids to be here. Kaylee, would you tell us just a little bit about your story? What got you interested in kind of delving into this area of betrayal trauma, and let our listeners kind of understand a little bit about who you are and what is your background?
Yeah. Well, it's a long story, but I'll try to make it short. I was in my undergrad, very early on undergrad, and my husband disclosed his own, you know, unwanted sexual behavioral struggles. And we had been together a long time. And so I immediately experienced all the symptoms of betrayal trauma. And this is back in 2007. So I really didn't even, there wasn't really a word to describe that that was mainstream. All I knew is I felt like a crazy person. And I decided at that time, because I'm just like a total nerd, to change my degree from music ed, which was my degree before, to marriage and family studies, and just really started to delve into it. And so my entire undergrad, pretty much, and my grad program, every paper I wrote was on sexual betrayal, everything I read and researched and whatever. But I didn't really do any of my own work at the time. And so I always say, like, I am the quintessential betrayal trauma person who is like, I'm going to learn everything there is to know about this thing, and I'm still not feeling better. Like, I literally got a degree in the topic and still was experiencing trauma. And then I became introduced to the 12-step program and the term betrayal trauma. And so I was able to, you know, as more information came out, I kind of rode that wave into finding my own resiliency, my own recovery work. Nobody's perfect. Nobody arrives, but I like to consider myself in a place to, you know, I heard from a really awesome therapist, speak from your scars, not from your open wounds. So I feel like I'm in a place to do that now. And so my husband and I are still together. We have an amazing marriage. He has a lot of recovery work that he's done, and I've done a lot of recovery work. I really still try to speak from a place of research, from a place of clinical experience and expertise. And yeah, throughout that, you know, I graduated, started working immediately in group practice and private practice, working with women with betrayal trauma. And I've just continued to do that since 2012. That's kind of been my life's work, is researching and reading and understanding and speaking with women and also men, and understanding everybody's stories and all the different little nuances, because every journey is different. So I actually hesitate to tell my story very frequently or getting into the nitty gritties of my experience, not because I feel ashamed of it, because I'm a total open book. If you have questions, feel free to ask. But I don't lead with that, because I really truly believe that each person's journey is unique. And although, you know, betrayal trauma, we can sit and list like the different experiences that we all share in common, because there certainly are those PTSD, you know, symptoms that we share in common. It's unique for everybody. So I actually had my initial D-Day and betrayal before I had children. And then I had my kids after I graduated from college. And yet I noticed that my betrayal experience still influenced the way I mothered and caused a lot of road bumps and causes road bumps from time to time for me. And so I became really fascinated in this aspect, taking this attachment approach that I do a stage even further, right? Because we have like, okay, well, I have my childhood attachments from when I grew up that gave me my own set of struggles that we all do, right? And mm-hmm. then I got into a relationship and had a massive attachment wound occur, this huge betrayal, which we'll talk more about. And now I'm trying to like bond with another little human, and for me, five humans at the same time.
Yeah.
And it just became really like in my face, like, oh, this is a unique aspect to have experienced betrayal. And then I've noticed that and worked with a lot of women who've experienced the same sort of things. So, you know, that's, I think, kind of what we're going to talk about a little bit today. I know you mentioned that was kind of the topic for today, and it's what is really my passion, is speaking on mothering after betrayal. But yeah, that's me. That's my story. I don't know. Yeah. If you have any questions, feel free to ask, because like I said, I'm an open book.
Thank you. Thank you. That just helps give context, you know, to what we're going to be discussing today. So I really appreciate that. And, you know, when we reached out to you a few weeks ago, I thought we had a great discussion. And what we kind of decided the topic to be was kind of, how do we mother and nurture through this trauma? And the topic is really inspired by a listener question. Mm-hmm. And while we personally don't have information to answer or address this listener's specific question, specifically to her situation, we did feel like it inspired us to address this particular topic. So I'm going to read the question just for reference and context to our discussion, and then we can go from there. She says, I have questions about how this is all affecting my three-year-old. And boy, this is a legitimate concern that we have as mothers, is how is all of this affecting our children? So she continues, I have set boundaries and my husband is no longer living in the house, and my daughter's behavior towards him is changing. She doesn't listen to him. She says she doesn't have to ask him anything because this isn't his house anymore when he comes over and spends time with us. So I'm not sure the best path forward and how to navigate all of this with children when we as adults don't even know what is going on fully. And she's not the only one who questions the best path forward, because we don't know what's fully going on in the time of our betrayal and trauma. And this situation has really turned our world upside down. And I mean that literally, you know, it really feels like that. This was not one of those scenarios that our mother or our grandmother or even our church leaders or culture prepared us for.
Right.
And there's a lot of agony, I know, surrounding how are we supposed to mother and then navigate child rearing when we're in the midst of this crisis or this trauma. And I'm sure that many of our listeners have felt like I did, very unprepared and very unequipped to deal with all of this and all of the ramifications of not only how it's affecting me as a woman, as a wife, but our children and even other family members. I mean, I remember recently having a discussion with my own brother who looked to my husband really as a father figure. Our father had passed away. And so he was working through his own issues. And it was even hard for him to address anything with me regarding my pain and what I was struggling with, because he himself as an adult was struggling with feelings of betrayal. Yeah, in essence. And so as we're learning how to work through our own trauma and feelings, our own personal feelings, you throw children into the mix and you're responsible for their nurturing and well-being, and it can just feel super overwhelming.
And that's even hard when you're not in trauma, right? Like right? Being a parent alone without trauma is hard. So you add trauma and you're just turning it up at 10 notches. Yes.
Great point, Naomi. And there are just a lot of circumstances that arise with parenting that and are really intended, and I think ideally to be solved with two people, you know, in a partnership working together. And then you throw this addiction and these patterns of abuse that are often present in the marriage. And it can really seem anything but a partnership. It doesn't feel like a partnership.
Oh, yeah, no.
And there are many internal struggles that a mother faces as she tries to meet her own emotional needs and then balance those with the needs of her children. And we should ourselves, I call it shooting ourselves, or these guilt trips. And normally I think that's pretty common with women in general, but then you throw the guilt of betrayal trauma in there and it heightens all those destructive, unhealthy patterns. And there are just so many questions that we agonize over. How much? What do we tell the children? You know, which parents may disagree about that. So there may be conflict going on about that. The age of the children would determine potentially kind of what you did and didn't share with them. And you may feel that there are some types of separation that needs to be had in the situation. And so you have to navigate what that entails with the children and the other household responsibility. And often the care of the children falls and rests upon the mother. And sometimes the spouse will disengage from parenting.
Yeah.
It may not feel safe for you to even have your children be in his presence. There are just so many scenarios and internal struggles that I haven't mentioned, but just wanted to validate that this is very, very complicated to work through. And the listener's not alone. Every single one of us are battling this out. So I just want to express my heartfelt admiration to all of you who are really in the throes with children in this situation. I know that I personally had days and months where I could not function. And I was so grateful that the child that I did have at home was still capable of taking care of herself physically. I mean, three of my children are grown and out of the house, so I didn't have that to worry about. But just my hats off to all of you ladies out there who are working through this issue with small children. So, Kaylee, I just want to throw the first question out there. Any thoughts about this listener's question?
Yeah, well, so many. I mean, first, I just want to say too, if this person is listening, like, you have my heart, right? Because you have this little one who, I mean, a three-year-old all by themselves, three, right? It's like,
right.
Like, oh my gosh, that's so much of a person in such a little body, and so much to be just trying to navigate all on that little person's own. And that relationship between you and the three-year-old is already going to be hard, right? And like you said, Janine, we're taking the mom shame, the mothering shame bubble, and the parenting shame bubble, which, by the way, are two different bubbles. There's, I'm not good at parenting my child, like rules and consequences, and when should I put them down to bed, and when should I, you know, all of the nuts and bolts stuff that this listener seems to be kind of talking about is a lot of the parenting aspects, right? Like, co-parenting between mom and dad, and do we disagree, and he's not in the house, and teenage daughter or older daughter is being disrespectful. So you have the parenting shame of, like, I'm not teaching this kid all of these, you know, nuts and bolts, day-to-day stuff. And then we have the mothering side of it, which is that relationship component. And there's so much stress going on in the household and feeling like I'm not bonded enough, or I'm not connected enough, or I don't, and usually that mothering shame is not always super conscious, and we may not be as aware of it, but we sense it, right? Like, I don't feel like they hate me, like, you know, oh, my daughter hates me, or my daughter hates my husband, and I feel like I need to navigate that for her and fix that bond for her, or my three-year-old is always throwing stuff at me or saying mean names. Like, we sense that, and that shame or that not enoughness is heavy. So now we have those two. And then we have this, like, Venn diagram where we throw the betrayal trauma in the mix. Now I'm all by myself, right? All by myself, I'm experiencing trauma, and I'm bumping into my partner. So then I have this relationship going on where there's triggers of trauma going on. And then I have that relationship feeling of not enoughness. And so we have, just like you said, it feels like this just web, this big ball of string that's all mixed up together. And I'm looking at this ball and everybody's freaking out and fighting. And it's, this feels yucky sometimes. And I'm holding the ball and nobody else, everyone's looking at me like, fix the ball, fix this, untangle this for us, mom. This is your job. And it's like, I don't know. Like, I can barely, like, take a shower. Like, are you kidding me? And then, you know, I also want to speak to the new moms, right? Cause we're talking about the whole gamut. So we've got our new moms who are just trying to, like, survive physically. We've got our moms with little, we've got our moms with teenagers and or school age kids and teenagers. We've got our moms with kids outside the home, trying to navigate that, and having grandkids. And It's a lot, right? There's a lot of relationships. If we multiply out all those different interactions, it's so complex. So I just want to send my heart out that I hear you and I hear that it's going to be heavy and that that's okay. You're not alone. You're not alone. You're not crazy and you're not doing a bad job, even if it really feels like it and you don't believe me. You really are. The fact that it feels hard doesn't mean that you're doing a bad job of it. The fact that it feels hard means that it's hard. Like you're in a difficult situation that would be hard for anybody. We could pluck any lady off the street, stick her in your shoes, and she's going to respond probably not as well as you are because you're living your life. So she's not even going to know how to handle it as well as you do. And so I guess that's when I hear that story, that's what I want to like give a virtual hug because it's just so heavy. There's so much there. And yeah, she's not alone in that complexity because it's complex.
It is.
Yeah.
What advantages do you feel like you had kind of experiencing the betrayal before you had children?
So advantages. What I want to clarify from that question is that becoming a mother is triggering. So if you had your trauma before becoming a mother, it's going to trigger up those feelings. And each time I became a mother again, my trauma resurfaced, despite my years of work, effort, and knowledge. And so it's okay. I guess a big part of my program and the way that I speak to betrayal is that it's something that we build resilience around. What I mean by that is over time, this unfortunately will always be a part of your life. This isn't something you're going to walk away from, even if you get a divorce, even if you get a divorce and remarry someone who's incredibly safe and connected. Being sexually betrayed is a part of your life. And that doesn't have to be a horrible, terrible thing because it's not going to be this bad in the hurricane all the time. That's not what I mean by that. But it'll always be something that might rear its head because it's a huge loss in your life. It's a huge trauma. So becoming a mother was triggering. The advantage was that, yes, I had built some resilience. I would say having my twins was probably one of the hardest times for my marriage and despite my husband's recovery work and all of his sobriety. But his recovery and his learning how to be an empathetic person and learning all of those skills also are continuing to develop, right? And I think the benefit was that I knew where to go. I knew where the resources were. I knew what the resources were. And then I had some backbone to say, hell no, I won't go. When it was time to say, hell no, I won't go, I was able to advocate for myself in a way that I wouldn't have earlier on. So there certainly were benefits, but I will say that it doesn't mean it's easy because becoming a mother is a very vulnerable time. And having children in general is a very vulnerable time. And so you're going to have your teenage boy look at pornography for the first time because he will. That's going to trigger your trauma despite all your years of resilience building. You're going to want to be having healthy conversations about sex and sexuality. That's going to trigger your trauma. You're going to have your teenage daughter get a boyfriend. That's going to you're going to have triggers with your children around your trauma. Around your betrayal experience, I should say, and that's okay.
I appreciate that point of view because I think it's hard at any point in time in life when you experience it. And I think just the process of being a mother, because being a mother doesn't really ever end, right?
Right.
You are going to do this for the rest of your life and beyond if you have that faith belief. But yeah, I think one of the big struggles is those teenage years when they're finding out who they are and trying to navigate that. And you're trying to connect with teenagers who don't really want to connect with you and trying to keep that relationship, you know, strong, but then still trying to work through your own trauma. And I mean, that's something that, you know, I feel like for myself, trying to navigate that is complicated and just sometimes just having a desire, like just wanting to connect with my kids, it's not always there. Sometimes all I want to do is get away from my kids. And I think that's normal for any mother. But then I find myself kind of feeling bad that all I want to do is be alone and be away from my children. But then I don't at the same time. You know, it's this like this push and pull where you're like, I want to be with my children and I want to nurture them and I want to love them, but then I want to be far away from them
and go away and don't come in here.
Yeah, no, I don't want to play a game with you. And then you're like, oh, I'm terrible mom, you know.
I love that you're bringing this up, and I love that you're bringing it up with like a chuckle, because right, we all get this as moms, like, yes, go away child, but I love you, right? And then they go to sleep and you're like, why are you sleeping? Yes, I love that you're bringing this up, and this is really what I wanted to, you know, this is where I put my focus of my clinical work, is this exact experience that you're describing. One, normalizing it, which you're already doing, right? To just be like, yeah, I think despite betrayal trauma, like, it's normal for a mom to just be like, oh my gosh, I'm in over my head. Like, this is exhausting. These bonds are exhausting. There's so much expected of me and I just need breaks. And so let's normalize that to kingdom come, right? Because yes, it's hard. And then of course we already talked about all of the other complex layers that are going on in your life at the same time. And then I wanted to dig a tiny bit deeper, because this is my bread and butter. This is where I get really excited about how these relationships can help us heal all parts of ourselves, right? Because it's all interconnected. It's all this Venn diagram. So one reason we have a hard time bonding with our kiddos after betrayal, especially, is because children, even up to teenagers, but definitely younger, are little Buddhas. Okay. Like, they are these present moment little Zen children. They don't look like it. They look like a mess, but they are so, well, at least mine, they're so present, right? So kids can be so present. And when they're saying like, let's play, like they are there, they're in that moment. And what happens is they're inviting us into the present moment, but guess what else is living in the present moment? All my feelings are living in this present moment. All of my trauma exists in this present moment if I'm not aware of it, right? If I'm coping, which I could do like a 10-week lecture on, but like our trauma, one of the biggest ways that our body, our evolutionary body and our God-given body copes with trauma is through avoidance. And it makes sense, right? Like, I can't spend every waking moment thinking about what my partner has done to me, or I'm not going to be able to wake up and feed my children. So I've got to avoid some of that feeling. I've got to find a place for it. And my body will do, if I don't intentionally do something to prevent it, it's going to be like, nope, don't think about it. It's gone. Or I'm going to try to avoid it by other things, right? Like preventing him from acting out again or whatever, right? Avoidance is huge in trauma. And so to step into that present moment with my kid, or any relationship for that matter, but it's easier to avoid friendships. It's easier to avoid. Like, I have a lot of clients that'll come in and they're like, oh yeah, like I don't have any friends. And I'm okay with that, because I don't want people and I don't get on social media because that's overwhelming. And I'm not going to a 12-step group, but I can't get along with my children. And I'm like, yeah, that's because you're trying to avoid them, because when we're in a relationship, it invites us into that present moment. And that's where our pain is. You know, again, I'm always a little bit tongue in cheek just to be like, I got you. I've been there. I'm there from time to time myself. But there's this experience of like, I don't want to, that sounds exhausting. Like my children, they're like, hey, let's go play farm. And I'm like, oh, farm. That's so hard. Like, hard. Okay. I have to literally sit there and like be a pig, and I can lay on the couch and pretend I'm a pig, but somehow that's hard, right? It's hard because it's present. It's hard because all my feelings live here in the present moment.
Well, it takes a lot of energy to be a pig. Come on.
Right?
It does.
Right? And I just want to point out that our kids are, that it's because of that desire not to be in the present, and our kids drive for us to be in the present. That's all they're like, come with me into this present moment. It's normal that we feel anxious. It's normal that we feel irritable. It's normal that we feel avoidant of our kids after betrayal. And the more recent our betrayal and the more crisis mode we're in, the more intense that's going to be often. But like I said, I find myself in that pinch too. Just, I'm not coping with my stuff right now. And so, yeah, I don't want to deal in the present moment. And then, like you described really well, Naomi, then we feel ashamed. And then our mom's shame comes in. That's like, and sometimes if you have my children, they're very vocal and they shame me. No, but they're like, why don't you ever do this? You know, they're very vocal. And then we feel shame. And then they respond to us. And also, we didn't have the other complexity of all of this. The other complex piece is our kids are going through an attachment trauma, sometimes more than others, like in this case that you gave Janine. Sounds like the kiddos are going to be having these attachment wounds where dad's gone. He's physically out of the house and he may have been emotionally gone for a long time. And that attachment isn't there. Sometimes that's hard. That's people always say, well, as a therapist, isn't it great? Because you're just like, must be such a good parent because you know all the things. I'm like, no, I just sit here and watch myself do damage to my children because I see, like, I can just see exactly what I'm doing. I can hear what they're going to say to their therapist one day because we do. And so that becomes hard too, right? Like, I'm watching myself not play farm. And I mean, I know that's not going to traumatize a child to not play farm. Don't go too extreme with that. But I'm watching myself disengage and I'm watching their response to that and how hard that is for them. And then that's hard for me. And then that's hard for them, right? And we're in this web and it feels really sticky. Yeah, it feels really sticky. And yeah. And so what do we do about it, right? What do we
that
do?
That is the $1 million question, right?
I know. It's like, where is the balance? Because I think that's the biggest question. Because I know that, like, realistically speaking, we can't be everything to our children at every moment, you know? So,
right, exactly.
So there is a balance. Like, yes, there are going to be times that we're going to disappoint them because we're not going to play with them or we're not going to give them 100% of our undivided attention, you know?
Yep.
And so there's this, like, where is this balance? Where do you find the balance of giving them attention that they need, but allowing them to also feel the pain of not having attention 100% of the time?
Yep.
You know, where is that balance? And I think that's probably different for everybody, I would imagine. But
yeah, I mean, absolutely. Everything we talk about is going to be unique to each situation and the children's needs and mom's needs. But I love how you described that. Like, there is a degree of helping our children build their own resilience through this, which is showing up in these meta communications. So talking about how we talk, right? So wow, you really wanted to play that game with me earlier today. And then I couldn't and I didn't. And or you were yelling in mom's face because I was just staring at the wall. You were doing that. What was that like for you when mom wasn't there? Oh, wow. You know, and of course, you're not going to talk to your teenager like this or they'll slam the door and drive away. But, you know, if you're talking to a little, like, yeah, you were trying to talk to mom and you're pulling on her shirt over and over. And that happens a lot, huh? Mom is just kind of gone a lot in her mind. And that must be really hard. What's that like for you? So finding space to do that after the fact is huge. And acknowledging, like, that's happens in life, you know, that happens when we want people's attention. They're not there for us. What can we do when that's happening? What kind of language can we use with them? Like, what words can we say to them to help them? You know, we can teach these skills at the same time. So just acknowledging, like, it's okay that you're not 100% there for your kid 100% of the time, because no one is, no one will be, never, no one ever has since the history of man, because back in the day they were having to, like, fight the, you know, lions and find some warthogs or something to eat, and so they could, you know, just give this perfect attunement to their child all the time. And those cave children were mad at their moms too. Like, it's okay, it's a part of reality that we're not going to be there 100% of the time, and that's not a bad thing. And where to start for the part of, like, okay, yes, I got it. It's normal. I got it that I need to be kinder to myself around me doing that. And I want to do better. So how do I even start when I want nothing to do with that? Or when I try and my kid just doesn't respond well, not maybe another talk for another day. But here's my one thing. So my one little takeaway for the day, I guess. So when I was a teenager, I'm just an anxious person. I have a lot of anxiety just by nature and by genetics. And I was terrified of driving. It took me forever. I was in my 20s before I ever really drove regularly. And my mom would always say, okay, it's not that complicated. Okay, it's not that complicated. Look out there. Everybody drives. Look how many people drive. And, like, you're a smart kid. Like, you can do this. It's not complicated. And I'm like, no. You have to sit down, and then there's all these people driving, and, like, I'm seeing all these little details, right? I'm seeing all the complexities of driving. Like, there's 1,000 cars in the freeway, and then I've got to make this right turn, but then is it a left turn and the stop sign? And, like, there's 1,000 rules, and I have to, you know when to gas and when to brake and how many miles per hour around a curve. Like, I felt very complex to me, right? And it is complex. It is complex. It was scary, and it was scary. And my mom was also right. There are a lot of people driving. Lots of people can do this. It's something that people can do. And you are a person, so you can do it. It's in your code somewhere to be able to do this. And so I want to meet this complexity And I don't want to minimize the complexity and the stress of it. And I hopefully that we've taken in the last, you know, couple, whatever, 20 minutes, we've been able to help you, the listener, understand that we hear you and it's complex. And I don't want to minimize that. And I want to meet it with simplicity. So I want to meet that complexity with simplicity. And again, not in a way to minimize the pain, because it is very painful and it is very scary. And if we try to meet complexity with complexity, we're going to get lost very quickly. So I want to meet it with is this idea of attunement. So attunement is something that everybody does. You do it, even if you don't feel like you do it. Everybody can do it. We're all born with it. And it's this ability to connect in. So if you've ever seen a mom with a new baby and you think about that image, or you know, you've had your own new baby, there might have been moments. It may not be a lot. If you have colicky babies like me, there weren't a ton of great moments in there, but you may have these moments where, you know, you make the eye contact and they make the eye contact and you're kind of back and forth and you're like, "Gucci goo," and they're like, "Hee hee," and you kind of have that back and forth attunement. That is the simplicity, and that is where the power is. And you can put these teeny tiny moments of attunement back into your life. You can create those for yourself. Now, attunement takes two people. So if your other person is not, your child is not in a place where they want to connect with you right now, that's okay. But attunement is quite simple. So what I recommend is find a time when you could be one-on-one with one of your children. And it has a couple of components. Attunement has eye contact, not creepy eye contact, but, you know, a good normal back and forth eye contact. It has a soft vocalization. So you guys are talking, just kind of having a back and forth exchange is a part of that. And very often has appropriate soft physical touch. So that might be just for a teenager. It might just be a side hug. It might be with your kid on your lap, you know, when they're little, they love to just get in your lap and get up in your face. And you're like, no, do it on your terms. I promise, do it on your terms. It'll feel better. And these moments of attunement are healing for both participants. So you make this intentional time to create bonding moments, and you practice entering into that present sphere. And when you do, your trauma might flood up. You might notice tears in your eyes. You might notice a pit in your stomach. You might notice thoughts flood in. Notice that and go, oh yeah, I knew that was going to come, because the present moment holds all that scary stuff. And if it's too overwhelming, therapy might be a good place, right? To go and to say, hey, I need some help with these thoughts that won't stop flitting in my mind, or my moods. I just can't manage my moods by myself anymore. Therapy can be a good place for that. But creating these little small, simple moments of present living in the safe, bonded, connected space heals trauma and is healing for your child as well. These really beautiful moments we can do, something we can do when we feel like we can't do anything. And even if the rest of the 99% of the day with your child just feels so disconnected and so scary, it's still a drop in the bucket that counts, I promise you. It still matters. And I know the perfectionist in me is like, well, then I want 100% of those moments. So be careful, right? That's also not great. We already talked about that. We want our kids to know that they'll survive while we go do work or whatever we got to do, take care of ourselves and do our own self-care. But I would add that these bonding moments are a part of self-care. These attunement moments can be really self-healing as well as helping with that relationship. And so I know this doesn't really answer the question of the listener. You know, she's just saying, holy cow, I don't know how to do all these parenting moments. And parenting is important. I'm not a parenting scholar, but I will say when we can start to reattune into our kids, they can help us know how to parent too, right? Then we start to be able to have more of a partnership and a dialogue, especially with the older kids, around what kind of rules and things need to go into place. Because I can tell you, your kid, I don't know, I guess I shouldn't say I can tell you for sure, but my guess is the teenage type girl who is given sass, she knows she's giving sass. She knows she's hurting. She just wants a safe place. So just little bits at a time, right? So that's my little thing. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I love it. I love it because it's so simple, and it kind of helps me chisel away at all the other not important things, or disconnect from all the unimportant things, you know, that it gives me hope too. And I know that there's no perfect parent out there on earth, but yet I still have this very high expectation for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I worry a lot more about these maybe unimportant things, that the simplicity of your message and kind of what you're sharing is so, it doesn't take a lot of time to do this. You know, right. I mean, I'm thinking about just yesterday, my daughter came in after she got home from work, and she had just gotten out of the shower. And so she had her hair up in the towel, and she just came in and she just sat next to me and then kind of laid down on me. And we just talked for about, you know, less than 5 minutes. And then she was done and she was on her way to do what she wanted to do that evening. And it was very simple. And I appreciate those moments as a parent, that she feels comfortable enough to do that with me, because I don't know that I had that kind of relationship with my mother. So I guess it helps me realize that, hey, maybe I'm not doing as bad of a job as I think I am. You know, maybe all this betrayal trauma will have some benefit in that I've hopefully created a safe space for her to connect with me when she wants to. And I know it definitely has created a different perspective on what I teach about sexuality and relationships. It has helped me to emphasize different things that maybe I didn't emphasize with my prior children.
Yeah, absolutely.
In when I teach her before she flies the coop or whatever.
And I love that example. And I love that you're able to even bring that to mind. And I would invite you to think, like, even as you're recounting this little moment, what does that bring you right now? So as you think to that event with your daughter that was so special, these little 5 minute special moments, and you think about it now, what does that bring up inside of you now as you're thinking about it?
Well, I think it brings a lot of hope and peace, and like, hey, you're doing okay. You're doing okay.
Yeah. I think that's so special to and important. Is, I guess that's, I wasn't going to add two things, takeaways, but that's the second takeaway that you're doing for us, Janine, which is let yourself remember those moments and bring those into your body space. Like, let your body remember, like, sitting and she's laying there and you just feel like you're with somebody and you have your buddy and you feel good about it. Even if it was just for a moment, it was real and it was important. And just letting that land and letting that be real and heavy. And again, even though there's that fight or flight part of us, that the survival part, that's like, well, that scarcity, that, like, that wasn't enough. I'm not doing enough. To just let that be enough. It was, and it was important. And not as a way of excusing other behaviors. I know that there are, you know, many who are like, yeah, but I scream at my kids when I go into my fight mode. I scream at my kids. So you want me to just say, oh, it's fine because I looked at them for a minute. No, right? This is more complicated than that. But that those healing moments are huge. Yeah. So thank you for that example. I love that.
I love that you share that, because I still have young children. Mine range from 5 to 14. Uh-huh. So they all fit in there. And then
it's a very chaotic time of life.
It really is. I mean, so many different things are going on. You know, you've got all the teenage stuff that's happening that is so complicated. Oh, there's so much. And today it's just amplified, like, way more than it was when I was a kid, the things that they're facing. And then, you know, I've got a child with special needs, and then you've got, you know, the rest that you're trying to do everything for everyone, and then you've got kids screaming at you and you're like, I need to be calm. And it's a process, and I've learned, I'm not perfect all the time, but I've learned to respond calmly to the yelling, you know, when I'm being screamed at by my one specific child. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, I'm not screaming at you. You need to stop screaming at me, you know. But then there are times when I'm like, no, you're not going to scream. You know? Uh-huh. And I lose my crap, you know. But, and then I have, you know, it's that take it back, give yourself some grace, because I'm not doing that all the time. And yes, there are times that I lose my crap too. Yeah. But but that I do get it right sometimes. And I do get that you're the worst mom in the world. I wish I was never born in this family. You know?
You can kind of chuckle at those ones.
And then I just have
ones.
To let it roll off my back. Like,
yeah.
Because then that night he's sitting there telling me, I love you, mom. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like those saying those, they don't mean them, and they're saying them in their own trauma and their own fight flight kind of behaviors. And and so it's just, it's complex, and I do get it right sometimes. I think, I hope more often than I get it wrong, I get it right. Even though there are times when I'm not engaged 100% all the time. And that's just a place where I look and let myself just feel it and just say, you know what? It's okay. It's okay that I'm not there 100%. And
exactly.
I don't know. I guess it takes me back to thinking about my own parents and kind of the way that they interacted with us. Like they weren't there 100% of the time. I mean, my dad had his own addictions and problems, and he was checked out of life like 99% of the time. The 10% when he wasn't, we were camping. those were the best family memories. He didn't have anything else to like to numb out on, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just think I think I'm doing better than my parents did. And I think that's all I can hope for, is that I can at least do a little bit better than my parents did. And they did the best that they could with their own trauma, because they had their own, you know, plenty of it. And so I think if I'm just doing a little bit better than my parents did, hopefully my kids can do a little bit better than I did, and we can keep this trend moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I like you're talking about a lot of just really good things. And one of the things I noticed is you're saying, you know, when my child is freaking out on me, and I notice my fight or flight or freeze go up in those moments, that's huge. Like, just that language speaks to betrayal trauma work, right? So
you're able to identify what's going on.
You know, you were asking earlier, Janine, like, what's the benefit of having gone through betrayal trauma work or doing your betrayal trauma work on being a parent? And I would say that's huge, is just being able to notice in the moment of a crisis what's happening inside of yourself, and then choosing to respond. And whether you're going to be practicing that with your child or with your partner, and whether it's a betrayal trauma trigger or a parenting trigger or a Venn diagram trigger, it's that same thing that you're describing that's really, really important in those chaotic moments, is kind of being able to be present in the good times when it's like created. So create those moments that I talked about earlier, where I'm sitting down, eye contact, hey, how you doing? And just having that listening back and forth dialogue. If it's a teenager, feed them, then they'll actually sit still. And on the flip side, it's when the chaos is raining down around you, practicing that, like, okay, my heart is racing, my fists are clenching. And maybe it's noticing after the fact when I yelled back, like, no, you don't get to speak to me that way. After the fact, going, okay, yeah, my heart was racing. I was having thoughts about them being a 25-year-old loser still in my basement, like, whatever, right? I'm noticing in myself in the present moment what's happening and what I'm doing. And even if it's after the fact, and then it's returning to those conversations later and being like, hey, remember how we had that fight? How are you feeling about that? You know, I don't feel good about it. I don't like how that turned out. I don't like when I said this. I don't like when you said this. I hurt my feelings, right? So showing back up later from a grounded place. And so learning to be grounded, right? So your betrayal trauma work is going to benefit you in your mothering big time. Learning to be grounded, learning to have that self-awareness and that internal self-dialogue that is slowed down are going to be really huge in all of these like chaos interactions that we're like, how do I stop these from happening? And so, yeah, whether you're working on them as a parent in your parenting roles or on your own, it's the same skill set that I hear coming through as you kind of tell your story, Naomi.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I think my parenting has definitely improved through this, I would say, because before I was not, it was not easy for me to recognize those things. So I think that is one of the blessings of this work, is that I think often we have these moments where we talk about praying for patience, right? praying for patience. Well, I think that got me where I am today. I've had plenty of opportunities. I know. I'm like, it's one of those things like, okay, you've given me plenty of opportunities for patience. I just need the patience, you know, but no, I think in all seriousness, I think that it really has taught me to slow down. And I think that is probably the most important thing, because like looking at my children and learning about children, they don't have the skills to slow down sometimes.
They don't have the brain development either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's a process of, I need to model that for them. Mm-hmm. So that they can learn to slow down. And so I think that's been a game changer for me, just learning about child development and learning, and really through all of this, you know,
yeah,
learning how to slow down myself so that I can give them some skills to maybe help them slow down and to process and to think through some of these things. Because like you said, betrayal is hard on us, but they are also experiencing their own trauma in this relationship breakdown that's happening.
Yeah. I was going to say, I meant to mention this earlier and then I forgot to, but even for partners where the betraying partner doesn't move out, there's no divorce, they still sense, there's still attachment, those miniature attachment ruptures that are going on, those little moments where there's potential for connection that is missed, you know, kind of like you described, Naomi, with your dad, like consistently being disconnected. And kids sense those and they're experiencing that at the same time. So yeah, I just wanted to reiterate that piece, that just because your partner may not have moved out, I think all of us as moms know that the kids sense something is happening and something's wrong.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Even when my daughter was really young, like my youngest was 3 and we're still separated. We've been separated for a while, but she still could sense, and she still does. She's 5 now. And she's, you know, do you love daddy? Like, she knows that our situation is abnormal. Yeah. And she just wants it to normalize. And so trying to give her all the connection that I can. But it still is hard, even on her, even though she doesn't completely understand, like she doesn't comprehend everything. She feels that things aren't normal. Things aren't the way that they're meant to be, I guess.
Right.
And so it affects her and it affects all of my children. And so it really does require that I do slow down with them from time to time and really take that time to connect. And I obviously get times where I am like, I'm not doing enough, you know.
God, don't we all? Yeah.
And so that's always there. But I think the biggest piece that I have to remind myself is that I'm not perfect. And I do make mistakes, but I'm also not their savior. And the biggest thing that I hope that I can do for them is teach them that they have a savior and that he can make all the difference between what I couldn't do for them. And so I guess that's my biggest, like, if I can just teach them who to turn to for everything that I can't accomplish for them, then maybe they'll be okay.
I love that. And there's some interesting research. It's hard to hear. It was hard for me to hear at first, but there's quite a bit of research that says that moms with PTSD often have children who have attachment struggles. When those children grow up and adults, they have attachment struggles. But the interesting research part, and this ties into what you were saying, Naomi, is that they found that women who will go do their trauma work, they'll find some resolution in their trauma. They'll continue to build resilience. Their children are also more resilient and have secure attachments. And so attachment, when we think about that ability to have these healthy bonded relationships, and you hear about attachment styles or whatever, depending on what you know about attachment, it's not set in stone. And that's a beautiful thing as a mother for us to know, because it can be scary. Like, well, my kid is freaking out all the time. I know they're anxious. I know they sense this disconnect from their dad or from me or from both of us. And so now what? I just have this kid who's just broken now. I just broke my kid. But the cool part is that as we do our own work, and as we know in the gospel, turn our children to the Savior as well, as we do our own work, that will have that effect on our kids too. You know, and I think for a lot of us, it's hard to take the time and the money to do our betrayal trauma work initially, because it's like, well, am I worth that? It's expensive. Am I really worth what? Just feeling better? Like, I should just be able to, I'll just suck it up. It's fine. It's fine. Yeah, I'll suck it up. I'll make it work. And although, obviously, I want all of my gals to do their work for themselves, it also, we can do it for our kids. Because it really does make a difference for them too. Yeah. And the more healthy our relationships get, the more healthy we get. So we can also work on our healthy relationships with our kids and our friends when our primary relationship is not functioning.
Right. I love that. Well, we all, I think, give injuries to our children, you know?
Oh,
My parents passed on injuries and their parents passed on injuries. And it just, it's part of life, I guess. And, you know, just to teach us that we all mess up our kids. So don't
shit all over yourself.
Yeah, don't shit all over yourself.
There you go. Bring it full circle.
Yeah. Sure. Well, anything that you would like to share with our listeners before we wrap up here?
I think just if you're in that, the middle of that big messy ball of string and you feel like the weight of the world of all the little people are on your shoulders, I just want to send out again my heart, because you're not alone. Even though motherhood can be extremely isolating and betrayal trauma is extremely, extremely isolating, it can feel like you're all alone, but you're really not. And that doesn't take away from the fact that it's really, really hard. It's really hard. And there's a way through. And I invite you to continue to listen to this wonderful podcast with these wonderful women who know what they're talking about and they're doing their hard work. And just keep moving forward. Keep moving forward. I post on Instagram. That's the only place I really do anything public is on Instagram. So if you ever want any, right now I'm doing a little series on empathy. So my handle is at Kaylee C. Dunn. So maybe that can be in show notes or something somewhere. And then if you want more from about this kind of stuff, you can find it there. But otherwise, just send them my love, because it's tough and you got this.
You can. Thank you, Kaylee. We will put everything in the show notes if you're interested in connecting with Kaylee. And we just want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Really appreciate your simple message.
Yes, we do. And again, she has her free Facebook community, Awake Resilience from Betrayal. So if you're on Facebook, you can look her up there as well. And again, like Janine said, we'll include these all in the show notes to make it easier to click and find. So yes, thank you again, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us this week on Healing with Worth. Make sure to visit our website, healingwithworth.org, if you would like to enroll in an online therapist-led support group. We'll see you next time.